Greetings, everyone. It's time for Native Sun, bringing you news of Indian country on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. The first story I have for you today is Bringing the Indigenous Flavor. This is by Dan Ninham, writing for ICT, published on the 28th of March, 2025. One Indigenous chef has become part of the fabric of downtown Phoenix. The Labriola National American Indian Data Center, in the Hayden Library on the Arizona State University campus, recently hosted two Diné poets, Amber McCrary and Kinsale Drake. Both are recognized as distinguished publishers of books of poetry. The event was catered by Renetto Mario Etzidi, commonly referred to as Mario, and he is a citizen of the Diné. Etzidi is the owner of The Res, an urban eatery, a catering and pop-up of traditional and vegan and world fusion Navajo cuisine in Phoenix, Arizona. Etzidi has extensive training and work experience with indigenous food. He started from an early age, and that has led him to where he is now. During my childhood, while other kids my age were playing, I became a caretaker for my grandfather, Etzidi told ICT. I learned to prepare traditional foods for my grandfather. I've learned to make them by observing and helping my grandmother and aunts. My grandmother had a chuck wagon business selling Diné foods at the local flea markets. During the summers after the school year, I would spend time with my grandparents. They lived in separate houses. My grandfather built his own house a few yards next to the family house, because my grandmother would be weaving at odd times of the day and night, added Etzidi. During the daytime, I followed my grandmother to forage and gather plants and vegetables around the family homestead, said Etzidi. Some plants were for medicine, some for dyeing wool, others to eat or flavor our foods. Indigenous chefs hold distinct philosophies with indigenous food preparation and cooking. There's a new trend of decolonization of foods, so there are cooks and chefs rejecting fry bread and old-world ingredients, said Etzidi. I find it funny that they do that, but then they're searing or sautéing and using colonial methods of food preparation in the process. Part of my advocacy of understanding traditional foods is we need to allow the natural process of change and adaptation. On a global level, indigenous foods has changed the cuisines of every culture the world over. However, indigenous peoples in the Americas have different experiences with colonization. We're slow to catch up to the rest of the world with directions of our cuisines, added Etzidi. Having an understanding and appreciation of our ties to these indigenous ingredients is the first step to expand upon our repertoire, said Etzidi. Etzidi knows his strengths and continually works on areas to improve, especially when it comes to flavor. It's what's most important. You can have high-end ingredients, but they can be easily ruined if you don't know how to balance the flavors, he said. Some ingredients meld well together, and most things have been done before. In general, people don't know what they want. They remember what they had. As chefs, there is some trust in what you have to offer. The idea of veganism in indigenous communities is somewhat foreign, as the English they all speak now. Our strength is presenting the traditional plant-based foods of our ancestors and how accessible it is. Being healthy and having access to healthy foods is difficult for many of our communities since we became wards of the state. This is one of our main focus, added Etzidi. Being a small business, Etzidi says there are still many hurdles to overcome. This includes increasing the visibility to both the indigenous and non-indigenous communities. Luckily, we do have various support that keeps us growing, Etzidi said. When it comes to indigenous cooking, the mentor relationship is significant to guide the best practice with indigenous foods preparation, cooking, and delivery. Etzidi has worked with Cindy Gentry, founder of the Downtown Phoenix Public Market, and says she has been key in his approach to maintaining his business. Her goal to make produce and local foods accessible to the common folks is in line with the goals we have set for our business, Etzidi said. She worked tirelessly in maintaining a presence in the downtown Phoenix area to promote local farmers and facilitated a market that also features local producers. Gentry said they met more than 20 years ago, when Etzidi began volunteering at the Phoenix Public Market and made himself available to do whatever needed to be done. Mario is a Renaissance man with an amazingly versatile palette, amazing palette as an artist, and is devoted to family and friends. When the market opened an adjacent store and cafe, he started working his magic in the kitchen. I confided one day that, embarrassing as it was, since I was involved with so many farmers and their produce, I had a distaste for celery, Gentry said. Gentry continued to talk about her professional relationship with Etzidi, recalling a moment when he gave her a chartreuse-colored drink and said, "Give it a try." "It was delicious," she said. "It turns out the secret ingredients were celery and green apple. I became an instant fan." And Mario launched an ever-changing line of frescas he offered daily at the market cafe. Customers came in just for them. They had a prominent place on the front counter of the cafe. As he has grown his culinary skills, Gentry said he's created lively events where people gather to taste his food, play music, and talk, keeping the night and energy going until dawn. His food has gone from being featured in bars to taking awards at the city's premier culinary event, Devour Phoenix. Etzidi even catered Gentry's wedding. "I feel glad and fortunate to have him in my life. He is part of the fabric of downtown Phoenix," Gentry said. Kimber Landing of Devour Culinary Classic and Devour the World Phoenix AZ had Mario cater her event. She called him an incredible chef who brings the flavors of Navajo Nation to life through both food and beverage. "We were proud to offer him top medals at both the 2024 and 25 Devour Culinary Classic for his outstanding use of heritage and grains," Landing said. Mario's journey to elevate indigenous foods shines a light on his ancestral knowledge and gives us a glimpse into Navajo traditions. At another event, during the summer of 2024, Etzidi catered at Mesa Community College in Mesa. Mona Scott Figueroa of Indigenous Representation Matters, The Power of Indigenous Identity, led at the event and raved about Etzidi and his food. The event was for Indigenous high school students and their families, and the menu included pumpkin tamales, gluten-free fry bread, Colorado beef stew chili, and Navajo tea sweetened with peaches. It was during his undergraduate studies at Arizona State University where Etzidi noticed the lack of indigenous-rooted foods. "Just about everything was pizzas and wings," Etzidi said, "so the idea of sharing a meal with bison meat, blue corn, hatch chilies, or sumac berries was unheard of. Now, however, as a registered vendor with ASU, we provide a number of indigenous ingredients and foods." Etzidi finished his undergraduate studies in fine arts with drawing and sculpture at ASU in 2000. He still delves in art, but also made the connection with fine arts to culinary arts. Various forms of catering happened since 2002, when there were weekly ASU art showings. "Once in a while, a friend would want some catering, so I would make a few items for their show," said Etzidi. "Then Phoenix First Friday started, and I had more frequent events. We would make omelets and crepes at the trunk space on First Fridays. That eventually became a fry bread stand." Etzidi continued to talk about the evolution of the indigenous culinary arts into catering business. "In 2015, we got our license that started the next steps into officiating the business," he said. "We have a regular pop-up at a local tiki dive bar that prompted the process." Etzidi is empowered by the gift of the monster hunger, food, and storytelling. "Within our Diné history, there was a time when monsters roamed the earth, and they killed many of our people. They were defeated by the warrior twins, but their mother, Changing Woman, is the one that saved us all, said Etsy. However, after the destruction of the monsters, there remained a few hidden. They survived the Holocaust. Sleep, poverty, lice, old age, and hunger. As the twins tried to kill them, they pleaded for their lives, citing how they would benefit humanity. Hunger said, "Without me, how will people be healthy? How will they be strong if they only bear once and never again? With me around, I will gnaw at their bellies to remind them to eat, and they will be healthy. They will find new ways to make food, new food to forage or plant," added Etsy. "Our taste buds are attributed to the monster hunger, so we will always find ways to survive." That article was Mario Etsy, Bringing the Indigenous Flavor. You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been bringing the disabled audio access to print information for over 45 years. Learn how you can support us at our website, sunsounds.org, where you can also listen to our live streams or find individual episodes on demand. Now, also, try listening to us with your iPhone or Android device with the Sun Sounds app. The next food article is First Foods: How Breastfeeding Could Turn the Tides on Maternal Mortality for Native Mothers and Babies. This story is by Elise Wild, writing for Native News Online. Published March 27, 2025. When Alyssa White gave birth at home in May 2020, her newborn son was immediately rushed to the hospital. When the Tlingit mother waited anxiously in the emergency room, separated from her child due to early pandemic protocols, she asked for a breast pump. "Even in that moment, in the flurry of everything that was happening, I knew I could start moving milk and be able to feed my baby in the way I was hoping," White told Native News Online. White's single-mindedness in the moment came from the month she spent in a pregnancy support group led by a Native lactation specialist. Even though White's baby couldn't latch during his first week in the neonatal intensive care unit, she maintained a strict pumping schedule. "I was pumping every 2 hours, waking up at night as though I had my baby physically there," she said. "Because I started off the bat, I was consistent and dedicated and was able to have an abundant supply." For White, breastfeeding represents more than infant nutrition. It's food sovereignty, ceremony, and ancestral healing. Across Indian country, Native women are working to restore these traditional practices that have been disrupted by generations of forced separation, assimilation, and colonization. "This is healing work," Elizabeth Montez, a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians, who led White's pregnancy support group, said. "It's not just a food choice." Having Montez, one of just two dozen Native Americans with the rigorous International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, IBCLC, credentials in North America, as both consultant and mentor, was essential to White's success. "It gave me a solid foundation of what to expect," White said. "Going into pregnancy and birth, I knew I wanted to breastfeed, and it was good to have a realistic perspective of what that might look like. I think there is a perception of, oh, if I'm going to breastfeed, it's just this natural thing. I'm going to be fine. But so many of us have been removed from that knowledge." The generational knowledge disconnect highlights the dual purpose behind bringing lactation support to Native communities: reclaiming breastfeeding as a cultural practice and ceremony, and increasing positive health outcomes for mothers and babies. Native American mothers and infants face alarming health disparities. According to a 2024 KFF brief on racial disparities in maternal and infant health, pregnancy-related mortality rates among American Indian and Alaska Native women are more than three times higher than the rate for white women, 63.4 versus 18.1 per 100,000 live births. The KFF brief also shows that AI/AN infants have markedly higher mortality rates than those born to white people, 9.1 versus 4.5 per 1,000 live births. Breastfeeding is linked to lower rates of conditions that disproportionately affect Native communities, including sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, respiratory infections, and diabetes. Angie Sanchez, a citizen of the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians and a Michigan State University doctoral student, sees breastfeeding support as a critical intervention in the crisis. Sanchez's own struggle with breastfeeding illustrated how expert support can be for new mothers. Her newborn son had an undiagnosed tongue tie, a tissue condition that restricts tongue movement and makes it difficult for the baby to latch to the mother's breast, causing weeks of painful nursing that she called agonizing. After turning for help from everyone she knew, friends, family, her OBGYN, her pediatrician, it was a certified lactation consultant who finally identified the problem. After a brief procedure in which her son's frenulum tissue under the tongue was cut to release the tie, he was able to latch onto her breast normally. "It was the first time in 12 weeks that I breastfed without being in pain," she said. The experience highlighted a major gap for Sanchez, who was living in Michigan's capital city, East Lansing, with access to healthcare resources. She thought about the women on her reservation 3 hours away who didn't have the same level of support. "I was privileged to be able to stay home and take care of my baby," she said, "and I had people around me for support. My husband stayed home for 2 weeks. My mom came to stay with me. I had friends stay with me. I don't know too many people who are able to do that. I felt a sense of responsibility to do something for my people." In 2021, Sanchez channeled that sense of responsibility into action. She spearheaded the NONI Project, a 2-year initiative funded by the Michigan Health Endowment that sought to saturate the state's Native communities with specially trained Indigenous lactation counselors. Unlike mainstream lactation consultant certification, which requires hundreds of clinical hours and extensive coursework, the Indigenous Lactation Counselors Program was created specifically for and by Native women. Developed by Cami Goldhammer of Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, the 45-hour curriculum is free to Native participants and focuses on traditional Indigenous approaches to breastfeeding support. The NONI Project proved remarkably successful, resulting in nearly 60 new lactation counselors from 5 of Michigan's 12 federally recognized tribes. "It's so needed in our communities," Sanchez said. A 2019 study conducted by the United States Lactation Consultant Association found that about 80% of certified lactation consultants are white, compared to roughly 11% who are American Indian or Alaska Native. The impact of these specialized Native lactation consultants extends beyond nutrition. While most private insurance plans must cover breastfeeding support under the Affordable Care Act, most Native families who rely on the Indian Health Service or Medicaid bear the out-of-pocket for breastfeeding support. Those costs can be prohibitive, with lactation counseling running from $150 to $350 per session. Even for those who are privately insured, only a handful of states license IBCLCs, and just one state, New Mexico, which has a Native population of around 264,000, licenses and provides Medicaid coverage for IBCs. Dr. Yolandra Gomez, a pediatrician and enrolled member of the Jicarilla Apache Nation, describes breastfeeding as the most important thing a mother can do for her baby. Working as the project director for her tribe's maternal, infant, and early childhood home visiting program, Gomez educates patients about breastfeeding's many benefits. It's a fresh, accessible food that doesn't need to be stored or heated up. It reduces cortisol levels, stress hormones, in both mothers and babies, and it's filled with therapeutic agents that protect against infection. While she recommends breastfeeding for her patients, it may not work for everyone. "And that's okay," she said. "I don't want to vilify a woman who doesn't want to breastfeed for her personal reasons. I'll always respect a family's decision to breastfeed or not breastfeed." Gomez wants more physicians to have candid conversations with their pregnant patients to prepare them for the changes and challenges that come with breastfeeding. "A lot happens when a woman gives birth," she said. "There is so much excitement, and of course it's tiring. There are misconceptions that breastfeeding should just happen naturally and easily, and it doesn't." If you are having a conversation about maternal health in Indian country, Tammy Goldhammer's name is likely to come up. Along with being a licensed social worker and full-spectrum Indigenous doula, she runs Hummingbird Indigenous Family Services, a Seattle-based organization that offers Indigenous knowledge and culturally competent birthing support to Native women free of charge. When she was pregnant with her first daughter in 2009, Goldhammer never considered breastfeeding, despite working in maternal health. The topic never came up in any of her prenatal doctor's appointments either, she said. "I never saw anyone breastfeed in real life, ever," Goldhammer told Native News Online. "I didn't grow up around it. Once I had my baby, the nurse asked if I wanted to breastfeed her, and I said, 'Sure, I'll try.' And it was amazing. I felt like I became her mom right then, when she went to my breast." For Goldhammer, breastfeeding her baby opened up a new worldview, where breastfeeding was the truest form of food sovereignty and the origin of human connection with the world. But when her maternity leave ended, she was at a loss when it came to using a breast pump at work. "I just didn't even know how or what to ask. No one in my family had ever breastfed, let alone pumped," she said. "So I Googled breastfeeding support for Native Americans, and nothing came up. So I thought, well, I better start something then. I can't wait for someone else to figure this out." The transformative experience and the realization that no resources existed specifically for breastfeeding Native mothers inspired Goldhammer to create the Indigenous Lactation Counselor Program in 2017. A year later, Goldhammer and Kimberly Moore Salas, Diné, made history as the first Native women appointed to the board of the United States Breastfeeding Committee, a national coalition that works to promote and support lactation. Goldhammer held the first Indigenous lactation counselor training in Alaska with 12 Inupiaq women. The second was held in Minnesota, where 50 Native women participated. "From there, it just exploded," Goldhammer said. Today, she and Moore Salas have trained more than 800 Indigenous lactation counselors across the United States, Canada, and Guam. During the training, participants make small felt and beaded breasts, which are stuffed carefully with sacred medicines such as tobacco, sweetgrass, sage, and cedar. If someone brings in local medicines that are used to help postpartum mothers with milk supply, sometimes those medicines are added in as well, Sanchez said. But also, in these lessons where the content is very clinical, which many participants have a hard time just sitting and listening to, so folks can listen while they craft. It's kind of like giving them something to fidget with, and helps with processing the information being presented. 1 month after Montez gave birth to her firstborn, her infant son was diagnosed with failure to thrive. She was nursing around the clock, frequently in agony, but her son was just slightly over his birth weight. Her pediatrician gave her one directive: go directly to the store and buy formula. "I was nursing around the clock and I felt like a failure," Montez recalled, standing in the grocery aisle with tears running down her face. She called her midwife for guidance. She told me to take a deep breath and asked me if I would like extra milk, donor milk, from another parent, Montez said. I was instantly like, of course. This was like nothing I'd ever heard of. I would rather give my baby milk from a community member instead of formula. While 28 donor milk banks exist in 25 states, a report by the Human Milk Banking Association of North America found that Native communities have limited access to this resource. In Native communities, breast milk is the first food, and breastfeeding is one of life's first ceremonies. While some have an easy time breastfeeding, like Goldhammer, others face physical challenges, including tongue ties, clogged ducts, improper positioning when breastfeeding, stress, and anxiety. Breastfeeding is a practice that we are taught, Goldhammer said. Traditionally, if we were having a hard time with it, we would have gone to our aunties or our mothers, but they haven't breastfed in like four generations. That knowledge was taken from them, but it's still there. It's just been tucked away and buried. But it still lives in us. It was passed down to us from our ancestors. All we do in training is bring it alive in our brains. We're just remembering it again. Montez, who helped White through her pregnancy, has mastered both indigenous and mainstream approaches to lactation support. She's one of nearly 800 Native women who completed Goldhammer's Indigenous Lactation Consultant Program, while also being among just 24 Native Americans out of 19,000 total consultants to earn the IBCLC certification. For her, breastfeeding helped heal intergenerational traumas. But she emphasizes that part of her role is supporting Native women, whether they choose to breastfeed or not. I really want to uplift that choice, she said. If you are standing in your own autonomy and saying, this is my choice, that too is ceremony. That article was First Foods, Reclaiming Breastfeeding for Native Mothers and Babies. You've been listening to Native Sun, the show for Indigenous issues on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Your reader is Bethany Williams. Music is Land Back by Palooza Nation.